This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, new life for old malls. Innovative models for transforming big box behemoths into hipper, more communal feeling centers for commerce. And putting some of the zillions of apps marketed to kids to the test by a certifiable kid. But we begin with the far less adorable but fascinating topic of disgust. Revulsion kept early humans from eating spoiled meat or snuggling up to people covered with oozing sores. Today, some cultures prize cheese writhing with maggots or drink liquor made from fermented saliva. No, this is not a trick to get you to say, ew, but a way to evoke the visceral nature of disgust, which, as Rachel Herz found, is powerful enough to convict suspects, incite genocide, and make us writhe and retch within seconds. Rachel Herz is an instructor at Brown University specializing in the psychology of smell and emotion. She's out with a new book called That's Disgusting, Unraveling the Mysteries of Repulsion, and joins us now from the studios of Rhode Island Public Radio. Rachel, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you, Virginia. Thank you for having me.
Well, one thing in your bio really jumped up. You served as a smell consultant to multinational companies and expert witness in court cases. My first question is, huh? And secondly, how's this related to disgust?
Well, it isn't really initially related to disgust. It may change now that this book has come out because, as you mentioned, my primary expertise is in the sense of smell, and I've been working on that for quite a while and actually have a previous book called The Scent of Desire, which is all about the psychology of smell. But in any case, I am reasonably well known in the circuits of those who make smell-based products. That includes anything from fine fragrances to laundry detergent to even drinks and other kinds of foods because flavor is part of smell. And also get called in when there is a legal battle where smell is involved. And this can range from anything from someone losing their sense of smell and trying to convince the insurance company it's not the equivalent of losing their little pinky toe, or something more major, which actually does hinge on disgust a little bit. And that is when someone or a group of people are complaining about an environmental odor that they believe is very noxious and destroying their lives and making everything miserable, when in fact, what I've found when I've been an expert witness in these cases is that there is no odor actually there. And it's just because the emotion the person feels or the group feels towards the facility that they think is producing the smell creates the expectation, as well as usually visual signals like a factory with a smokestack and that kind of thing.
Well, the strength of emotion here is big. You write that of the six basic emotions of happiness, sadness, anger, fear, and surprise, revulsion is the only one unique to the human species of living creatures and the only one that has to be learned. So what is going on in the brain when we are disgusted?
Well, so it's very interesting, Virginia. First of all, we have, every healthy human has the capacity to become disgusted, but we have to learn to turn that mechanism on. And young children don't show any disgust. You actually, the first lesson almost all kids learn is toilet training, and that's when feces first become disgusting, and then other things pile on from there. But children who have been raised in the wild, you know, the so-called feral child, I mean, these are very rare cases, and although they haven't been studied in the sort of criteria for looking at disgust specifically, it doesn't seem that they show any disgust even when they're found as adolescents. And if you look cross-culturally, you'll see enormous differences in what people consider to be disgusting. So it's been called the instinct that has to be learned. And I really like that the phrase because it really explains how, although the brain is definitely involved in switching it on and it has a dedicated area called the anterior insula, it's also really highly dependent on experience and learning and culture.
These are also the areas of the brain that are incited, I guess, or activated with disgust, incidentally, also stimulated by lust. What do you make of that?
Well, this part of the brain is actually stimulated by quite a few things. Taste is, in fact, another area, another sensation that's highly stimulated by the anterior insula. And the connection between taste and disgust is also very basic in the sense that if you put quinine on a newborn's tongue, she will make a grimace that looks just like you would look if I said, could you please hold your neighbor's dirty denture? So the connection there, and other animals have distaste in that they will spit out food that tastes bad, specifically bitter, because bitter is often a signal for poison, and so we shouldn't be consuming it. But in the lust dimension, it's also the case that this part of the body, this part of the brain, is a part of the brain that also controls a lot of things having to do with the body. So lust, addiction, a sense of your own self in place, actually also empathy. It's a very interesting part of the brain, and it's very sort of impulsive. I think Freud would have called it where the id resides, because it's all about sort of wants and needs and hates and stuff like that.
And the registering of disgust is extremely idiosyncratic, as you said. You know, it's different between cultures. But in the extreme, it manifests as OCD. On the other end of the scale, the insensitivity to personal revulsion found in people with Huntington's disease is something you write about. Tell us more about this.
Well, this was, in fact, the little nugget that first got me really fascinated and disgusted, and this was about 15 years ago. And I was just completely blown away to find that a group of patients with a particular neurological disorder had this bizarre inability to recognize what someone making a disgusted face was feeling, and even to really understand why you wouldn't want to be eating a bowl of earthworms. So it turns out that why this is so fascinating is because the part of the brain that's in fact degenerating in Huntington's disease, which is a disease of the motor neurons first and foremost, and that's where you get, sometimes it's called Huntington's chorea, and chorea is Latin for dance, so you get this jerky physical movements. Eventually, it actually shuts down the whole body, and it's a terrible death. But the idea that this group of people have this deficit led to the discovery that in addition to the anterior insula, right next to that is an area of the brain that controls body movements, and that's called the basal ganglia, and that's actually what's degenerating in Huntington's disease. And both the fact that the basal ganglia seems maybe to be involved in disgust, plus the fact that it's right next door, neurologically speaking, to the insula, means that there's this crosstalk and I think cross-degeneration happening. And that's what first led to the discovery that, you know, a specific part of the brain could be pinpointed that's involved with disgust.
We're talking about the mysterious emotion of disgust and what makes people, some people, disgusted, and others, well, in some cases, hungry. Rachel Herz is with us. She's an expert on the psychology of odor and author of the book That's Disgusting, Unraveling the Mysteries of Repulsion. Rachel, our producer, Taylor Quimby, took a walk around our office here to find out what some people find gag-worthy.
When all the dishes are left in the sink and all the food sits at the bottom of the sink and then it keeps piling up, and at the bottom of the sink ends up being this weird gelatinous mixture of food and yogurt and fat. It's disgusting.
Boogers or nose picking disgusts me to no end.
I love my baby. It's a disclaimer. I love my baby. But he is disgusting.
Dirty bathrooms and dirty microwaves.
I think restrooms can get pretty repulsive at times.
Cleaning out the grease trap in a restaurant grill.
People throwing cigarette butts out of the car window. This just happened this morning. Someone driving in the opposite direction of me threw their cigarette butt out, and it actually landed on the car in front of me.
Wet cat food, because it smells nasty, and then the cats hover over their bowl and they just slurp it up.
Yeah, that sounds gross.
A lot of these, Rachel, are something that looks disgusting. So that's a fascinating aspect of disgust. If it looks like it might be disgusting, it must be disgusting.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting because although my expertise is in the sense of smell, smell is really not the primary sense involved with disgust. It really is vision. And you can even get things that are perfectly good, for instance, a piece of chocolate that you would otherwise really want to have. But if it's formed into the shape of a piece of feces, people are instantly repulsed by it and they won't eat it, even though they know that this is delicious chocolate that they would have wanted if it was in a square form. And so if something looks like something repulsive, we have the same response to it, even though its contents are not disgusting, as we would to the real thing. And this is because disgust is literally contagious. You can sort of catch other people's disgust. We become disgusted very easily. We're highly suggestible with respect to disgust. I also thought it was interesting that a lot of the comments people made referred to animalistic type behaviors or uncouth behaviors, sort of, you know, throwing the cigarette butt or slurping and those sorts of things. And this is because one of the key aspects of disgust is trying to deny our true animal nature, because our true animal nature also belies the unfortunate fact that we, just like other animals, are going to be squished one day and die, or at least we have the capacity to, but we're definitely going to die. And this is something terrifying to us and is really sort of a fundamental feature of the emotion of disgust, our avoidance of death. And anything that reminds us of that is something that we find abhorrent. And so we have all these codes and rules for behaving like civilized people, and we sort of exalt human behavior to a level that's non-animal. So even in the context of sex, you know, humans make love. They don't have sex like animals do. I mean, so we really try to detach ourselves from our animal nature, which unfortunately is always there lurking in the distance, or maybe not so far in the distance, depending on the person.
But you do write about, you know, the terrible case of manipulating that fear and disgust and turning disgust against other people, specifically in the case of the Rwandan genocide in 1994.
Yeah, it's really a very horrible thing that it's because disgust is so easy to manipulate, it's so psychologically malleable, and it's so powerful and easy to suggest to other people. If you take a group of people and you castigate them as something disgusting, as vermin, as something connected to disease. And in Rwanda, what happened is the Hutus castigated the Tutsis as cockroaches, and they were broadcasting this over the radios, you know, exterminate the cockroaches. Well, first of all, you have two things operating here. One, you've turned a group of people into non-humans, so you've dehumanized them, and then it's easier to think of them as something you can exterminate. And then you've actually turned them into something repulsive that you would want to exterminate. You know, if bugs were filling your home, you'd call the exterminator. So this sort of mirroring of this creature that is vermin that you want to exterminate, you want to abolish, becomes the sort of metaphor for this group of people, and they literally become seen that way. And then it becomes much easier to, in fact, enact behaviors to eradicate them. And this is, you know, certainly you would have people that would, you know, resist this, but it is ridiculously easy to sort of get the suggestibility in there that another group of people are disgusting. I mean, even the way we look at the homeless or drug addicts, our culture has made them very much marginalized and very much on the fringes of disgust.
Well, I wonder, thank you so much, Rachel Herz, for, I don't know, grossing us out a little bit for, I guess, good purpose.
Well, thank you, Virginia. It was great to be on.
Thanks for joining us. Rachel Herz is an instructor at Brown University specializing in the psychology of smell and emotion. We do have much more on her book, That's Disgusting, at wordofmouthradio.org. And coming up, we'll have an antidote. A new podcast reviews adorable apps for the under 10 set. That's when Word of Mouth continues.